If you have a slight feeling of déjà vu about the upcoming production of Teresa Rebeck's play Bad Dates at the Cincinnati Playhouse, that's to be expected. It was a runaway hit for the Playhouse back in early 2005, and not just here in the playwright's hometown. She wrote the show for a very funny actress, Julie White, and it did well in New York City. It was also one of the most produced shows on regional theater stages in 2004 and 2005. 11 years later, it's back, although it's moved from the Playhouse's main stage to the more intimate Shelter House Theater. Here to talk about the show is its playwright who, as I mentioned, grew up in Cincinnati. She's had a successful career in TV and theater, but she finds her way back to see her family frequently, and the Playhouse has showcased plays by her, presenting The Understudy in 2010 and commissioning the world premiere of Dead Accounts back in 2012. Welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you.
So, Bad Dates is a one-woman show. It takes about 90 minutes to perform. It's set in the bedroom of a New York City apartment where Haley Walker is a middle-aged Texas divorcee. She's now living with her daughter in New York City and trying to make ends meet as a waitress. Her life changes. The Romanian mobster boss who's running the restaurant where she works gets busted for money laundering, and she becomes the manager and is really successful. That doesn't immediately extend to her love life, however, as your show's title implies, Bad Dates. But we get some insight into just what middle-aged dating is like, even if you have hundreds of pairs of designer shoes. So where did this story come from? Is it personal experience? I mean, I know that you wrote this with Julie White in mind. So can you talk a little bit about the origins of this particular play?
Well, my first marriage to a Romanian mobster ended very badly. Okay, that's not true. I had a lot of conversations with Julie. We had worked together on several things, and she was going through a lot of issues around. She was a single parent with a teenage daughter, and it became, you know, a source of deep amusement to us to talk about bad dates and bad dates that I'd had, bad dates that she'd had. And at the time, I was starting to get interested in writing fiction, and I didn't know how to enter the world of writing fiction. And I thought, well, I honestly couldn't figure out the third-person narrative voice. I would try it and then think, who's talking? And it was very deeply confusing to me. And then I thought, well, if you're going to try to write a novel, then you should write it in the first person. Like, call me Ishmael. You know, I thought there's a grand tradition of writing novels in the first person, and maybe it would be like you inhabit the character and just let them keep talking and describe the story. And so, and then I thought, you've never even really done that in the theater. You've never really tried to command a voice and tell a story through one person's point of view. So maybe you should try that first. And so I literally started writing this one-woman show as a way of practicing to write a novel. And one of the things I found interesting about it was that it was very challenging. I've never done it since. You know, you would think everybody really is kind of interested in one-person shows for many, many good reasons. And I like very much the way it focuses on consciousness and one person's performances. I love the tour de force-ness of it all. But it took me much longer to write that particular play than any other play I've ever written because it's so hard to get the character and the plot to move forward in time because you've got a person talking to the audience and basically narrating events that have already happened. So the energy of the play started to drag backwards, and I had to keep figuring out how do you keep it moving ahead. You had to keep the character in a dynamic relationship to the present, you know, and then I created offstage characters that helped with that, and I started creating events like, oh, look, here's a box of money underneath the bed. I wonder what that's about. And that those things that were propelling her into the future were different than the stories she was telling about these wacky dates that she had. And that, in fact, the dates, as it turned out, were a distraction for her from the onrush of real trouble, which was upon her.
We mentioned that you wrote this for Julie White. Julie was in part your inspiration for it. As you were writing it from start to finish, were you always just sort of envisioning it as a project that she would undertake? Because it's had so much life beyond with many, many other actresses doing it. And I just
that's the playwright's situation, that she's a great interpreter of my material and has been in other, she did the understudy as well. And there are different actors who I think of in my head for certain projects. And when you do that, you take your life in your hands a little bit, because sometimes they're not available. Sometimes you end up finding a production and the producer wants somebody else. But in this case, I did get to see it first with the person who I had imagined it for. And then if a play has legs, then you want to see it, you actually want to see it with other people. And I'm still excited. There are several people who have played her I just thought were thrilling. You know, it's exciting to see that, honestly.
We never actually meet any of Haley's dates or her daughter. They are just people that she talks about. But they're really vividly drawn and very easy to imagine. Are they rooted in real people? I mean, you mentioned that Julie had a daughter. So did some of the inspiration for the various dates or whatever come for your and Julie's experience, her daughter, those sorts of things?
Yeah, I had people in my head. You know, like I know what BJ looks like, her brother who she talks to on the phone. And I know what Vera looks like. And I know what some of the guys look like. But beyond that, it's pretty much whole cloth. Yeah.
You seem to gravitate to comedy in much of your writing, or at least comic tones in things that you write. Comedy is certainly not an easy form to write, but the show also has moments of genuine feeling. And many of your other works, it seems to me, have also done that. So how much of a challenge was this for you to try to balance the comedy with the more serious underlying message with this?
That's actually generally where I'm aiming. You know, that's the spot over the center field line that I'm aiming for, is laughter and tears. And, you know, it's very Chekhovian, the kind of theater I like to go to. I think that there's wisdom in those two sides of our experience standing next to each other. And I also like to entertain an audience. I feel like what I'm hoping for is that everyone can be on the ride and the excitement of being in a theater and enjoying the show that's being played for them.
Unrelated question that I want to ask. I believe you know the physical spaces at the Playhouse. I think your shows have been in both of them there. I think it's going to be interesting to see this one move from the Big Mark stage to the Shelter House, where it's more intimate. We are in an apartment, in a New York apartment, which certainly never be as spacious as the Mark the Mark stage there. So do you think that will have a different impact on how the show plays?
Yes. I like it when the audience is right on top of the characters. The one thing that's always a worry to me is how many seats are there. And I think the Shelter House is a great size. I think it's like 250 seats or something.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because a lot of times when people think of, you know, they think of a one-person show, they want it to be intimate. And so much of the show really does sit on its energy as a comedy. And if you get fewer than like 100 people in a room, comedy becomes very dicey. Like if 20 people don't feel like laughing, it makes a really kind of chaotic experience. And sometimes it's disorienting that you can't get the laughs rolling the way you want them to. I mean, in a lot of ways, comedy is just very technical. It's both organic and technical. And I'm fascinated by how it works. And I'm always like, don't do this play for less than 100 people. That's just a dangerous number.
Well, I'm sure that there'll be more than 100 people lining up to see Bad Dates. It was so popular when it was here before. Bad Dates opens on Thursday at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park and continues through June 12th. For more information, follow the link that you'll find at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I've been talking with playwright Teresa Rebeck about her play Bad Dates, which will be on stage very soon. Thanks for coming by for this conversation.
Well, thank you for having me.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Pender.